Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here. I'm here with Yoan Noble, who's the Chief People Officer at Foskin, one of the Canada's leading law firms. So with more than 30 years of experience spanning employment law, HR leadership, organizational development, she brings a unique perspective to human dynamics at play in complex high-performance environments. Yoan began her career as a lawyer specializing in employment and human rights before moving into a firm-wide leadership, really serving as Chief People Officer now, where she oversees people strategy, DEI, and mentorship across the firm. She joins us today to talk about the psychology of collaboration, how AI is shaping the way teams work together within the legal industry, and what that really means to lead people with both curiosity and caution during times of rapid change. So Yoan's really become sort of a leader and a speaker in the space. And why I love talking with you, Yoan, is that you have this sort of like legal background and this sort of transformational time of high change, but you also really have people at heart. And I think that is like mission critical, just given where we are as a society right now. And so I'm just look forward to this conversation. So before we start, do you want to just share a little bit about yourself? Anything I didn't ask, kind of, you know, where you're coming from, what you're seeing, what you're excited to talk about?
Yeah, for sure. And it's always interesting having your bio read back to you, right? And yeah, I never predicted I would be here when I started. And I always sort of take a moment to reflect on that, because especially when I'm coaching junior lawyers or people entering, you know, the legal field, or even people entering the HR field, I sort of say, you know, I didn't have the dream of becoming a chief people officer. That wasn't something that I thought was going to be what I would do. And it even took me a little bit of time to figure out that it was law that I wanted to do, and then a little bit of time to figure out that it was labor and employment. And so I say, you know, I think you want to be intentional when you're thinking about your career and what you want to do, but you also have to seize opportunities when they become available to you. So prior to law school and being in law, I actually worked in the nonprofit sector and was really focused on health and HIV/AIDS policy specifically. And so then when I went to law school and I came into a law firm, I realized that while I really did like litigation, it was the people side of litigation that I liked. And that's where I found my, you know, calling with respect to labor and employment, because it was litigation, but also people focused. And then the next evolution for me was more that I really did want to focus on the development side. How do you get people to perform at their best? And not necessarily around, you know, litigation, around employment relationships, but really focused on how do you get the best out of your people. And really was excited when I was advising clients on what they should be doing, you know, the preventative work. And that's what led me down this path in terms of onto the talent management side.
Amazing. So how do you spend your day today? Like what does it look like? And, you know, what an interesting background to, and like including the nonprofit, you've sort of done these different things and it's all come together in this one seemingly like perfect package to kind of do the work that you do today. So how do you spend your day?
Yeah. So the days are never boring and never dull. And you start out the day with your best of intentions in terms of like your three big wins for the day, or that's how I sort of start out. And sometimes you will get to all three, but often, you know, there will be a fourth and a fifth that you didn't plan for. And that's part of the adaptability that I think you need in roles like this, mm-hmm. because there will be your strategic priorities and what you're setting out to do. And you have to make sure that you can maintain and focus on those. But then you also have to leave space for the unplanned, because there always is the unplanned. And I also have the communications team that works with me as well. So lots of interesting things that happen there from both an internal or external standpoint as well.
Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah,
I can just so identify with that. I'm just thinking what I'm working on personally getting better at is that I have my, you know, my notebook with all the things I need to get done. And what I don't often plan enough for is how much other people need me actually in their stuff, and realizing their stuff is also dependent on me. And it's hard to basically plan for and then prioritize.
Yeah. And I think you're so right in terms of what other people need, because a large portion of my job right now is really to work with leaders to make sure they have what they need in order to motivate their teams and drive their projects forward. And so a lot of my focus is on how do I help to motivate them? How do I help to relieve barriers, blocks, resolve issues for and with them? And so a lot of my day is focused on that, because I have this amazing leadership team that I get to work with. And so it's really working through some challenges with them, asking them the right questions about, you know, what do they think they should be prioritizing? What are they missing? What are some of the risks that we should be thinking about? What are they hearing from their teams? Like all of those sort of one-on-one questions that help to move strategic initiatives forward, to help to move general, keep the lights on projects forward. So it's often that, and we have multiple leadership teams here too. So there's the team that I get to work with. We have our local office managing partners. We have a firm managing partner, and then other senior business executives as well. So it's always sort of within that. But something that's always been really important to me too is to maintain that connection with the people who are doing the work, right? So we'll often have things like focus groups with partners about what are the key capabilities they think we need to be developing in our lawyers, with junior associates, with business professionals about, you know, what are they seeing on the business side of law? How can we help them to unlock potential in their teams? So I try to make sure that there's enough time that I spend connected to the people that are actually doing the work as well. Because otherwise, I think sometimes you can kind of sit in your office with your strategic priority and a small team, but not know how these things are landing or being felt by the end and ultimate user.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've got a complex workforce. You've got people with all over the place, like with different roles and responsibilities. And as a chief people officer, you're both setting the strategy, and it's important to you to kind of like be out in the field, so to speak, to be like, is this actually working? Yeah. Is it landing? And it really comes down to, I guess we started this off thinking about time and time constraints and priorities and not having, and that brings us really to AI. I know like this is something you think a lot about, and I'm just interested to pick your brain because you hold both of those priorities, which is people and also legal, right, impact and like what's legal and fair and all the things. So what comes to mind when you, I know you're thinking a lot about this, like what are you thinking about? What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, so I think my thoughts around it are threefold. I think the first is really how it's going to transform our industry in terms of how we actually deliver service to our clients. And, you know, how can it help us to deliver better service to our clients? How can it help us to focus on those really thorny, complex challenges that our clients need to solve for us? And then the second is around, you know, the impact on the person in terms of, you know, what can it give them back? What time can it give them back? Sort of harking back to our earlier discussion. What time can it give them back? What can it free them up to do? The things that they want to do more of? What are some of those administrative burdens that it can really solve? And then the third piece is really around ensuring that we're putting in place the appropriate guardrails and privacy considerations and the legal impacts and considerations, right? So, you know, we have this incredible knowledge management partner who works with us. She's one of our partners, and she's our chief knowledge management and innovation officer, and she's really driving our AI strategy. And she's so live to all these risks and all these guardrails. But we talk about this stuff on a consistent basis, right? To say, okay, we want to make sure that people aren't using AI to record really crucial private conversations, right? We want to ensure that it's not putting client information into tools that are outside of our platform. So that's sort of the third area that I'm really thinking about. And maybe one in relation and sort of like a 2A, I guess I would say, on the second part is, you know, what can it give people back? But then I'm also thinking about, what are people worried about? What are people concerned about with the advent of AI?
Yeah, no, I'm totally identifying so many levels, but it sounds like you're really thinking about how to kind of, you know, I know you, we were talking earlier and you were saying sort of like, you're very thoughtful about having a high performing environment. You work in an incredibly competitive industry at a competitive firm. Performance matters, well-being matters, all these things that you're thinking about as a people officer. And that sounds like you're also thinking about how to have a long tail of that. So it's not just this like peak optimization thing. It's like, how do you actually have this sustainable way of like working and living and then keeping people within the organization? And it sounds like you see AI is plugging into this in some way to lighten the load on the employee front, collaborate better with your external partners, and then also what are the legal parameters that you really need to put around this so it's people are protected. And also there's like an adoption thing too, right? Like, you know, I'm just imagining, I don't know, but like I imagine like, actually, I wonder, this is a question rather than assumption, like how do lawyers think about AI adoption? Like, I feel like some industries, right? On one hand, I'm in startup, people are AIing all over the place. I'm in other environments. Like psychology, that therapists are like, don't even send emails, you know, because it's too exposing in some way. But what's sort of like the environment in the legal world in terms of like tech and AI and...
Yeah. And so I think probably within any workplace it runs the full gamut, right? Of those who are super keen to adopt it, to those who are more reticent. And I think that lawyers in general, and you know, I try not to make too many generalizations about people, but we do see that the average lawyer profile is a risk averse profile. Right. And it's not risk aversion without reason.
Yeah.
And I think that lawyers in particular are really cognizant and mindful of delivering the best service for their clients, especially within our firm or a firm of our size, dealing with the clients of our size, that we need to get it right for them. And we need to make sure that it's done right. And so when you have new tools that are coming fast and furious, you need to be able to test them consistently enough so that you know the accuracy of that tool, that you know that you can, you know, be certain that it's going to provide you X or it's going to check it in a certain way. But I also think the other thing that we've started to do is really start to have conversations, especially with our partners who are the ones that supervise our junior associates and really lead the firm, is how do you supervise in the age of AI, right? And so, because we do want people to adopt it, but we don't want them to adopt it with abandon. We want them to adopt it in a very careful way. And so when we were having these conversations with our partners about how do you supervise it in the age of AI, there was one partner who said to me, well, it's really like going back to first principles, right? If a student gave you a piece of work, you would review that work before you sent it to the client. If your assistant gives you something, you know, you review it. And similarly, right? But like it's building in those same checks and balances on the work. And I think when people feel like those guardrails are in place and that the accuracy is good enough that it can give you a product that's actually usable. Because at the beginning, some of the tools were so inefficient to use that it was not leading to giving people that time back and not leading to that efficiency. And I think we're still on the growth curve on that for sure too. I have a friend, you know, who's a surgeon, and she was explaining that she was training a robot to assist her with a surgery. And obviously when she was first training the robot, it took an exceptionally inordinate amount of time. So it was not saving her any time to have the robot in the surgery. But then ultimately they got to a point where the robot could, you know, be a great second staff member in that surgery. So I think it's similar with respect to AI and lawyers, right? I think initially there's going to be a lot of work on the lawyer part to ensure that AI or, you know, and the large language models that we are using within our safe confinement of space delivers the best course of action. But you're going to have to work with it to get that, right? You have to give it constant feedback to say, no, that wasn't right. And, you know, I asked you for the top three things and, you know, you reversed the order, right? Like you've got to continue to get that best product out of it and learn how to use it too. So I think while I sort of started this of saying there's the full gamut, those are some of the things that we're thinking about to try and move people who might be more resistant to adopting it. And the risk aversion profile, you know, often puts lawyers in a more skeptical camp. But I think in the best way, right? Like they're being skeptical with reason. They're being skeptical to ensure that they're providing the best answer for their client, and that, you know, their client can still get the same level of excellence and service when we are incorporating AI into our work. And so I think until the majority see that it really can be beneficial and help them in their work, it's not going to take off as much until the majority can really see that. And I think we are getting there. Like, I think we're well down the path and we have excellent leadership in this space and we're having the right conversations around it too, from a change management perspective.
Mm-hmm. It's making me think it's like I'm thinking about from a behavior change perspective.
Yeah.
And then just without, you know, although we're making some assumptions here that if like lawyers in general tend to be more risk averse, right? Then risk averse meaning they don't want to adopt a new behavior that's potentially risky, right? Yeah. And then so how do you kind of like move the needle? I'm thinking like there's many industries like this that is like, I don't even want to tangle with this because I don't know enough. And like society doesn't necessarily know enough. You know, it's not just informing, you know, myself. It's sort of learning as we go and then trusting in baby steps. But it's making me think like this importance of like when you want someone to make a behavior change, helping them see the value it's going to add to their life. And I feel like this really tags into your bigger mission of like better longevity and health and well-being and all these things. And you're at this point now where, you know, law firms in general are, you know, hardworking, work a lot, do all the things. So you see this opportunity of like potentially adopting this new technology that could help bring more balance potentially to the field. with a population that's typically risk averse, right? So I'm just thinking like, okay, what needs to happen from a behavior change perspective around helping them really see the value that it's going to bring? So like, how do you think this could actually really help lawyers like in like the immediate term? Because I think you're right. You know, and I know there's been a lot of parallels, especially when AI was still, you know, first coming out or coming out more widely. This idea is kind of like an intern. And I think of that, like, I'm really resistant to hire interns because I'm like, this is going to take more work and I don't have enough time to deal. Yeah. So I don't really want to take on interns unless they really have a specific skill that I'm missing. And I feel the way you're describing sort of AI, I'm getting that feeling too. It's sort of like, you have to see the long-term possibility here. An intern goes away potentially after the summer. Your AI agent or whatever you're training is going to be with you, hopefully for the long haul.
Yeah. And I really like that analogy because law is a job where you learn by doing. So we bring in interns on an annual basis, and that's how we really develop and attract the best talent. So I think it's really convincing lawyers that, like, you know, this is a great junior and intern that if you invest in,
I love that,
you know, they can help to pay dividends. So I think that's one thing. And I think the second thing is what you hit on, which is how is it going to improve their lives? And then how is it going to improve the results that they can deliver to their clients? Mm-hmm. And so if we really focus on that, I think that it will be more widely adopted. Like, if you can focus on, you know, those administrative tasks that everyone dislikes in their job as an entryway to AI, I think it's a great starting point, because as you were talking about risk aversion and behavior change, I was thinking about, you know, the fear of the unknown. Right. Mm-hmm. And what we know about like belonging and inclusion work on, you know, if something seems so wildly different, you're worried, right? And you're trepidatious about it. But if you're able to bring, you know, people together and you're able to bring the technology to people in a way that will ultimately benefit them, they will be less trepidatious about the technology. And I think a lot of, you know, everybody experiences that. And that's I think the journey that if we can take people through that journey, I can see that they will adopt it faster. And everyone's motivated by quick wins, right? So if you so if you can sort of pair that, you know, the risk aversion, but then if they can see the benefit in terms of, okay, where's it going to give me back time? How is it going to help improve the work that I ultimately deliver to my clients, so improve my business and improve my brand? Then yeah, I would be willing to take some time to invest in this and to figure out how to use it as in part of my practice, right? And so I think that's where we really need to focus in terms of the behavior change piece. And on the sustainability piece, I think it is tough, right? Because I do think initially you're not going to see the change in terms of giving you back the time. I think that's going to take a little bit longer. There may be, as I said before, there's like those quick wins that I do think you have to build in to build that momentum to keep people motivated. But then I think you need to be really clear with them, and you can probably talk more about this than I, but when you're managing people through change, transformation, uncertainty, you need to also prepare them for the things that might occur, right? So instead of saying like, yeah, you know, it'll ultimately save you time, you have to be very clear about, you know, it may save you time on X and Y. It will likely increase the amount of time initially that you have to do, but then it will build from there, right? I think it's what I have sort of been reading, and again, this is where I think you can probably speak better to this than I, but what I've been reading about, you know, in terms of human psychology and leading through change and managing through change, it's really trying to provide that ultimate vision, but the clarity on mm-hmm. what you do know, right? And what you do know to be true. And so I think it's when, you know, people feel as though you said this was going to save me time, but ultimately it's taking me more time. And I'm not sure what the benefit will be at the end. And I don't see how this is going to help me in the end. So I think long term, it's a very long-winded answer to your question, but I think long term it will give lawyers time back in some areas, but I think it's going to take us a while to get there and free them up. That's the other part that excites me. It's free them up to do more of the work that they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mind's going in all different directions. One, I have like this, like, mental. So one, we have a, you know, in firm groups, we have a bi-weekly newsletter. And just today, our focus was on the importance of having a clear vision of the future and then communicating that out. And you can't build what you can't see, right? So like you have to have a very clear vision of like how this is going to serve like your entire firm really in what capacity, and then like having people draw closer connections between that vision and where they are today. So I just love this idea. I was telling you sort of offline that we're expanding our product and our platform, and we're just meeting with this platform developer yesterday. And she was like, you know, this coach I had a long time ago, he had two senses that changed the way I managed people for like my entire career. Very senior person. She's at the Institute of Quantitative Social Science now at Harvard, but she's been at all these like startups doing product development, like leading it. Like, I'm not going to like quote her properly, but it was basically like, you can't build what you can't see. And it's like kind of your fault as a leader if you're not communicating and creating this vision and communicating it out. But like the best thing is to really get a very, very clear vision, hire great people, and like communicate what you want, and then allow them to figure out the how around it. She's like, it really freed me up as a manager. We got great products because people were kind of building their own. And what I was saying is like, this is what we teach in coaching. Like it's, you know, it comes from motivational interviewing, but you have to get someone to like really see the vision of what they want for themselves and then baby step into like how to get there, all coming from their own minds, not like, you know, the coach's mind or, and then I just think like different industries have different language for it, but that's like the take home. And then I'm thinking for you, it would be super interesting. Like, imagine if you did some kind of like assessment around people's readiness for change around adoption, what would most serve them, you know, and then put them in like cohorts, which is like design your, like, you know, whatever you build, what's your, you know, and then basically give them a scaffolding to baby step them around, like, how do you build a tool or use this tool in a way that's really going to serve you? And I think the things we've hit on are one thing that I think when you're talking about how this is going to serve them as individuals, like lawyers are driven, smart, competitive people. AI is going to help them be better. Right? How do you actually help them see that and tie it directly to their business outcomes and then give them tools to get there? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think there's some, you know, test cases and proof points that we'll have to develop. So what you were talking about in terms of the readiness to change, I think it really is figuring out who are going to be the early adopters, right?
Yeah.
And honing in on them and then they can become those proof points and those evidence. But then I really loved what you said about tailoring the programs to them, because the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about in the learning and development space is how do we train in the age of AI, right?
Yeah.
If there's certain things that you needed to do in order to understand contract review, like how do you train someone to review a contract as though they've already read 1,000 contracts, right? Because if you get AI to do the first review and then you get a lawyer or, you know, a law student to review that review, they need to know what they're looking for.
Exactly.
And so it's this simulation-based training, but then it's also like how they learn and what cohort they're in, right? So when you were talking about you need to tailor the training to the cohort, I think that's so important because we often just train as though there is one person on the other. Like yeah. Everyone learns and knows and has the same, you know, makeup. And that is not true, right? Like we know mm-hmm. that from human psychology, we know that from the research. And so I think there is this, and I was listening to an interview with Josh Burson, and, you know, he was talking a lot about how AI can actually create these individualized learning plans and these individualized yeah. learning programs.
Oh yeah.
And even on how it can coach leaders, right? So like, you know, as a leader, the leader could say like, I need to talk to the team about X and Y, you know, what should I bring in? What should I not? And I mean, you have to be so careful there. You again yeah. will know more there too. But I think there is, like, I think there's a way that we can actually use AI to help enhance learning.
Oh yeah.
In an individualized way that will really impact, you know, our industry if we do it in the right way.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because although we're in like on the surface, we're in like very different fields, right? Sort of psychology and legal, but they're both like service-based like firm, yeah. like approaches yeah. or industries that the human relationship really matters. And so, you know, I was talking to you more about this offline, but we think about this all the time. It's like, how are we working with our companies? How are we using AI? We're an AI-enabled platform, right? People see yeah. us as a service. They see us as coaches showing up, whatever. But the bigger platform we're building is really focused on using AI. Like we give everyone assessment, like from across the team. Then you have yeah. a leadership, you have a snapshot of your team personality profile. Yeah. Then each individual has their own team assessment, how they're showing up at the team. AI is doing this for us in a much this would be like impossible to do in any scalable way if we weren't yeah. using AI. And then we're building tailored coaching programs for each team based on the unique. And now the platform we're building is nudging people towards behaviors that promote cohesion. But like you couldn't do any of this before AI, you know? Wow. And I'm just like, and then giving feedback to your point. Like imagine yeah. if we were on the same team and we're about to have a meeting, it would mm-hmm. say, Bobby, you know, Yoan's personality styles X or this in the yeah. business goals that you need to get accomplished. This is the best way to approach or you have a 5-minute meeting. Now, all yeah. of a sudden you're collaborating in a more effective way because I basically understand you better. You understand me and in the context of the team and the business goals. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, no, that's fascinating and awesome that you guys are doing that. Because I think feedback is hard, so hard for everyone, yeah. right? And so if you are able to have an AI coach, I've been thinking a lot about this. Like if you can have an AI coach that helps you prepare for those feedback conversations, and it's also just,
yes.
Is it asking you the right questions, right? In terms of what do you want to give feedback on? What are the specificities? And I think people get really scared about the constructive feedback part, but it's even on the you know, the positive feedback part, right?
Yeah, people don't like to do it.
No, and they say excellent or good job, but then the individual has no idea what exactly yeah. was specifically excellent or great, and they don't know how to repeat it, right? And so I think that the fact that you guys have that and that there's AI built into that and the personality around that, that's the real special sauce of how you're going to get the best out of your team members.
Yeah, it's like optimizing, and that's where it's like there's a place for the human. You don't always yeah. like, so it's like what we're doing, we're not here yet, but this platform yeah. person we're building out with now is measuring cohesion on team. So when the cohesion dips down, it cues it's time to go meet with your coach. Here's a tailored yeah. program based on wherever the individuals of the team are. And then now you're coaching for specifics, but then that coach goes away at some point because you don't always need a team coach at 100% of the time. And yeah. now the AI agent is the thing that's sort of affecting coaching more passively during the downtime. So anyway, we could talk about more about that. It's just fun. And I'm just thinking for you, like when you were thinking about like the readiness for change for all your people, it just got me thinking because I, you know, am living in this headspace too, is like, imagine, so like your cohort that's most resistant, right? Like if people are just like most scared, whatever demographic they are, or just, you know, whatever reason they're doing that, it's like teaching them the skills is not going to happen. It's going to be more of like understanding their fears and getting them comfortable around that. So the task is really like education, not teaching at all. Like you almost need to like move them down the motivational interviewing. And I can share some stuff with you, the class I teach is on motivational interviewing, but it's like moving people down the path. So it's like that most resistant cohort needs education. They need empathy. They need things to get settled. The next step is focusing on their goals as an individual, like how AI, what's like one goal that AI will help you with? And then picking it. And the next step is actually activating, like, how are you going to learn this and giving them customized telling, like, I don't know. I'm just riffing right now, but I was just like applying.
I think that's exactly right. And I think it is really thinking about how the individual is going to move themselves down the AI adoption journey.
Yeah.
And instead of sort of implementing or mandating, which we would never do, but I think you really need to look at it from a lens of what makes up that individual and you know, why are they resistant to the adoption, and where can we make some improvements there. And I think there's always that fine balance, right, between like you need to roll something out and you need people to adopt it. And so it can't be that you have like 10,000 different plans for adoption. But the more tailoring that you can do and the thinking around how it's affecting the individual and teams, I think you're exactly right that will be what improves the adoption rate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I can send you. So I'm just thinking, like, looking through a motivational interviewing lens. I know we could keep talking about this and we need to end probably but it's like they really, it's like you basically, you know, you do some kind of assessment, readiness for change, where are people?
Yeah.
And then the first step, the most resistant, that's about like education. The next one's focusing on you basically have four stages that you're trying to, you know, so it's like, you know, readiness for change. Then the first step's education, understanding, empathy. Next one is like focusing on the goal, what do you actually want to get accomplished? And then it's like learning some basic skills. And then the last stage is like really implementation. So your early adopters are going to start at the tail of that thing. You know what I mean? And then the most resistant adopters aren't going to adopt anyway if you don't actually help them like move down the...
And that's where you start to, and that's where you start to create those proof points for them and the fear of missing. Like,
totally.
Right? Those are
they're baby stepping it.
They're baby stepping it. And you need to work definitely on the adoption phase. One thing I think we have done quite well is the consultation process on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that you are spending that time to sit with practitioners to say, okay, like side of desk, how do you use this? How could this help? So that we are really appreciating how it will really impact their work and the business use case for it. Because I think there are things where you can say, okay, team A, you try this, team B, you know, you're going to be sort of our net neutral. But I think it's even better when you can, you know, have the team A be the team A that says, like, I would like to try this. You now know how it's going to help improve. And then, you know, some of the other teams will start to follow, right, or start to adopt.
Oh, yeah.
But when you can tailor it to that team and really understand what that team is experiencing, it'll resonate with them and they'll see the value. So, yeah, I think that four stages is critically important.
Yeah, so interesting. we better get ready, Dan, because we could, I'm sure you're probably have other meetings and we're just, I'm enjoying this conversation. But just as we're wrapping up, Yoan, is there anything that, you know, I haven't asked you, or like if people want to get in touch with you or anything, you know, you kind of want to say or share as we're getting ready to end?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, happy for people to reach out. I'm always interested in having conversations like you and I connected on LinkedIn. And so LinkedIn is a great place to find me. And I'm one of the only Yoan Nobles. So if you search.
And Yoan's
Yoan's Ewynne. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's not too hard to find on LinkedIn. Really interested, as you talked about before, Dr. Bobby, on transformation, you know, human transformation right now, the sustainability of work. How do we drive peak performance? How do we use AI to drive peak performance and sustainability? All of those things are critically important to me and what I'm thinking about these days. And so I just wanted to thank you so much for having me. This has been an awesome conversation, and I think we could probably have gone on for hours. So thank your listeners for listening to our conversation today, but thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much for making time, and we'll keep chatting and just keep up the awesome work. I love listening to you and like listening to you think and holding all these different sides between really the people, the legal, and the transformation. It's really a fun conversation. So we'll keep chatting, but thank you for spending time today with me.
Pleasure.
All right, we'll see you. Bye, Yoan.